to the Poetic Justice Dialogue Series. I'm your dialogue hostess, Vanessa Fisher, and I'm here with my guest, Nadia Manzoor. Nadia is an actress, writer, comedian, and producer. She grew up in a conservative Pakistani Muslim home in North London, and her formative years were spent straddled between two seemingly irreconcilable cultural worlds. Her experience eventually led her to the creation of her solo performance, Burk Off, a play where Nadia embodies 21 characters from her upbringing in London, including a domineering father, a soulful mother, a saucy English friend, and Islamic studies teachers whose interests range from slapping to pornography. Nadia's performance has been selling out across US cities and is now touring in England and South Asia. Her story illuminates powerful themes that are often hard to discuss and asks provocative questions about religion, gender, culture, and identity through the medium of art and humor. Nadia has long had a passion to merge the arts with social reform, and her passion for art and social change has also led her to found Paprika Productions, an all-female production company that produces works by brave and curious women. And I personally became interested in Nadia's work out of my own curiosity about Middle Eastern politics and the Islamic religion, especially since living here in Turkey. And I was really interested in how these themes converged with my long-time fascination with gender issues. And Nadia's work I just saw as very courageous in provoking questions I think a lot of us need to be thinking more about, especially now with what's going on in the world. And also found that she had this way through her art and through humor to approach some really serious and often uncomfortable topics to talk about. So I'm just really honored to have Nadia here to dialogue on my series. So welcome, Nadia.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I'm excited.
So your personal story, you know, what you went through growing up, that's sort of central to all your work and what we're going to be speaking about tonight. So I just love to give you a little space at the beginning to just, you know, share a bit about your journey to what brought you here. I know there's a lot, but whatever feels most pertinent and, you know, how your own experience, your conflicted identity growing up led you to, you know, your writing and your acting. So yeah, just to start there.
Sure. It's definitely very surreal when I look back at my journey in terms of becoming an artist, because growing up in a very conservative, strict Muslim Pakistani home in England, the concept that a female could be an artist was not something that was even an option. You know, so it was one of the first messages that I was ever taught and fully emphasized throughout my life was that my inherent purpose was to please a man. It was to be a wife and a mother. And, you know, whatever kind of personality attributes or quirks that I had as a human were amazing as because it served the happiness of my future husband. And it took me a very long time to even begin to identify as an artist. I mean, it's been, you know, maybe the past 2 or 3 years that I've really began to look at, you know, what I actually do in my work and be like, no, I am an artist. I write and I perform and I do comedy. And I think that was really a big challenge for me growing up, which was any sense of any kind of aspiration that I had for myself, which is something I talk about in the show. Like the first thing I ever wanted to be was an astronaut. It's like the opening of my show. I was 5 years old. I was obsessed with space. I used to play this game where I'd, you know, close my eyes and I'd have this out-of-body experience and I'd like go into the infinite and my mind would pop and it'd be amazing. And I thought that that's what astronauts did. And, you know, my dad kind of shut me down pretty early on. He's like, you know, beta, what is your husband going to do if you're floating about in space? And, you know, while that was kind of like the message that I was getting, which was everything was about my husband, that I shouldn't get too fat and I had to stay pretty and ladylike and dainty. My twin brother, on the other hand, was being encouraged to the extent where he was supposed to know all of the capitals of the world and know all of his multiplications. And I think as a result, I started to really go inside myself and in my own inner world. I had a crazy imagination. I used to write a lot of stories. I used to listen to a lot of stories. And I think that was the way that I kind of internalized the inability to be creative openly. I wrote my first story when I was 7 years old. I've been journaling and writing stories since as early as I can remember. But, you know, again, I never understood it as something I was developing or that it was an art. It was just something that I did. I've always done impersonations and accents and put on little skits in my room or written plays for my friends. But again, it wasn't anything that was ever seen for any other purpose than being an entertaining woman. So coming to this place now where like my whole life is about my creativity and my art and putting it on stage has been such a huge transformation for me spiritually, in terms of just like owning my purpose, in terms of understanding who I am. And it's interesting because I don't think that I ever would have got to this place if it wouldn't have been so forbidden, you know, if it wouldn't have been such a taboo for me to express myself, because ultimately I ended up having to just vomit everything on the page in order to be able to understand my past and the way I was raised and just reconciling the cultural differences of growing up in the West.
Hmm. And I'm curious that, you know, you embody like 21 characters in your play, right?
And, yes, I did.
You know, and I want to talk a bit about the themes and, you know, what you were exploring, but I'm just curious if you felt that through sort of taking on these different characters, was it healing even in being able to kind of understand these different people in your life and where they may have been coming from and their viewpoints? You know, I think acting is kind of powerful that way, and that you actually kind of take on these different characters and maybe can understand them in a different way.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in two ways, you know, one in the writing process, which was the first time I started writing this story, it wasn't to be on a stage or to be read by anyone else. It was for my own sense of catharsis. I was trying to understand my background and my family. So I would write conversations that I'd had with my dad that were very challenging, or with my brother that were really antagonizing, or with my mom that were really loving, in ways to remember my past and to kind of make sense of it all. And through writing their dialogue, it definitely helped me kind of understand their position. But then acting and being these particular characters and embodying them in the show totally gave me a different understanding of their position and a different ability to relate to why they were the way they were. You know, even to this day when I performed the show, just yesterday, in fact, in rehearsal, and I was doing my dad's character, Abu, I actually found a different nuance in understanding his love for us that I haven't understood before. And it was a really powerful moment for me, because his dialogue, it may seem very kind of like rigid and dogmatic and, you know, telling us off, but underneath it all, there's this real fear and this love and this protection of protecting his babies from what he considers to be the outside world, you know, the foreign Western world that's full of sinners. Right. And it came from such a sense of love and protection. And I get that in deeper ways when I embody them, for sure.
It's almost like an amazing sort of collective shadow process, you know, like you're embodying all these different, you know, value systems and ideas and family members. I just think it's quite powerful.
Yeah, for sure. It's not a traditional one woman show, you know, in that way, because I'm not doing a whole bunch of monologues. I do scenes, so I'm constantly doing like actual scenes with multiple characters at once. So having to transition very fast from different perspectives used to be just really, really hard. And now I feel like it's been opening me up as a person to be able to do that more and more authentically.
Fascinating. So watching some of your clips from your performance, and I mean, it seems, I'm just sort of curious, like, can you give us a sense of just your experience, like when you were young, what were these cultural worlds you were straddling? Like, what was the conflict that you were experiencing? I mean, it's interesting too that your family even came to London at all, based on sort of their value system. What was kind of going on at that point in your life? What was their reason for coming? And, you know, how did those two worlds collide in that way?
Well, I think for my father, you know, his father moved to Pakistan at the time of partition in 1947, when Pakistan was created. And he always felt, my dada, my grandfather, that, you know, the intention of the Pakistani leadership at the time of partition never really got to become a reality. And as a result, it was very politically volatile and not a country that he could be proud of. And so he always taught my father to leave. He always encouraged him to leave. He's like, any chance you can, you should leave Pakistan and you should go and create a future for your children outside of this country. So I think it was really the political volatility, the uncertainty in terms of education that led a lot of Pakistanis to immigrate in the early 70s to the US and the UK. And, you know, my dad was one of those people. And in many ways, yes, he came for the freedoms to the West, but at the same time, there was a lot of freedoms that they really weren't able to embrace because it wasn't something that was understood from our cultural context. So, yeah.
How did you become more interested in the values around you, and how did that conflict with your Muslim identity?
Well, you know, as a kid, you just want to fit in. So when you're, when I was young, I'm five, I'm six, I'm seven, I'm going to school with a bunch of English kids, and they all wear shorts in summer, and they eat sausages without it, without blowing up, and they don't speak a different language, and they don't have to pray, and Islam is not a part of their life. So it's just, when I was very young, it was just a sense of being so different. You know, my mom would come to school and pick me up dressed in shalwar kameez, kind of smelling of oil and samosas. And it just drew a lot of attention to myself, and it made me uncomfortable. So as a result, as a kid, I used to lie a lot about kind of, you know, my family background. Actually, it's funny, in the beginning of the interview, you called me Natalie. And when I was a kid, I used to call myself Natalie because I didn't want people to know that I had a funny sounding name. Huh. And I used to also...
I knew that somehow intuitively.
Yes, I think you did. And I used to change my brother's name from Hurum to Kevin. I was just essentially ashamed, you know. So that was one way that it took shape when I was younger. But then as I started to hit puberty, the way that it really became obvious was my dad's strict commands in terms of dress. And just becoming very aware of my sexuality when I got my period, and how, you know, the way I present myself is going to determine men's behavior. And that was a very clear message that I received at home. And it was confusing to me because, you know, in summer, all of my friends are running around in shorts and skirts, able to play PE and run on, you know, run in track. And I wasn't allowed to participate in any of those things. I had to cover my legs. I had to hide the contours of my body. I wasn't allowed to show my ankles or my arms in front of my twin brother. So there started to become this real sense of shame just around who I am. And there was a lot of conflict for myself around that.
And as you're questioning all these things in your performance, you're bringing it all to light. How do you find the communities around you have responded to that, both, you know, Muslim communities, your family, Western audiences? What's been kind of the response to you provoking all of these questions?
The overall response has been overwhelmingly positive, regardless of community, race, culture, gender. People are really able to relate to the show. People come up to me after the show and congratulate me, thank me for my bravery, thank me for telling their story, you know, thank me for educating them about the internal world of a Pakistani Muslim female, which isn't something that you see, you know, regularly in media. And then, you know, also I get a lot of letters and people asking me, is there hope for us to reconcile our family traditions with now our individuated selves? You know, how did you do it? How do you have a good relationship with your father now in spite of how you grew up? So people really want to engage and share their own stories. And it's been really positive.
That's kind of one, I think the powerful thing about your story is that you're, you know, you could have easily been ostracized by your family, but your family actually sort of changed with you, it seems, from the little bit that I've read. Yeah, that your, even your brother and your father has sort of come around to see a different perspective because of the work you've done.
Yeah, and yeah, for sure, for sure. I mean, there was definitely a time when I was ostracized from my family. You know, I was 18 to 20, and I was, it was my first love of my life. It was this Catholic Irish guy and head over heels in love. You know, we were going to get married. We were going to change the world. And but there was just no way that I couldn't even mention his name at my family table. I mean, I wasn't permitted to date before marriage, you know, let alone date a white person of a different faith. So, that, you know, when my family found out about that, it was around the same time that I lost my mother to cancer. And that was something that my family really, you know, took them by shock, and they expected me to take a lot of the responsibility around her passing because of my life choices were so misaligned with what was expected of me as a good Pakistani woman. That was a really, really difficult time. But, you know, we never gave up on each other. My father and I, even though we fought to the end, I fought with him to see that, you know, he's Catholic and he's white, but he's a good person. And I fought with him to talk about, you know, the veil and the hijab in Islam and the objectification of women and how the things that he says doesn't make sense to me because of this and that. And I didn't give up the fight with my dad because I wasn't willing to let my family go. I wasn't willing to do what a lot of people at that time were suggesting I could do, which was just leave my family. And I think that fight and that volatility that we both bore for a long time paid off. And now I have a really wonderful relationship with my dad, and he's become a true fan of the work, a total feminist, and really supportive of the show. So
fascinating. And have you felt that, you know, especially with just what's going on in the world, that there's been sort of an increased interest in your work because of just people trying to grapple with, you know, the Middle East and identity and, you know, just Westerners trying to understand that perspective?
Absolutely. I mean, the first time I even started writing this into something that wasn't a journal, which kind of started through the original medium, which was a memoir, my writing group would constantly say to me, you know, this is amazing. There is no story like this that exists. You have to tell this story. We don't know this worldview. So that really encouraged me to continue writing. And I think now for sure with the cultural climate, people want to hear more about, you know, women who have a different take on it. We're trying to get out of the very polarized understanding of Islam. And I think more and more people who are going to tell their stories, then more and more nuance can, you know, inform our understanding of the Islamic world. So,
yeah, absolutely. I wanted to bring up, because I was reading one of your blog posts on your website, and it was particularly about a performance you did of your show in New York, and it happened to be, I think, a day or two after the Charlie Hebdo attacks.
Yeah.
And you were writing about having this unusual experience of the audience not laughing at the scenes that usually cause people to laugh. And I just wanted to quote a little bit from your blog, because I thought it was, the way you said it was really important and eloquent. So I'll just quote a little bit and then bring in a question around it. You say, a politically conscious, socially aware, progressive audience needing permission to laugh. I didn't get it. I imagine the audience was thinking something like, can we laugh at Muslims laughing at themselves? Can we laugh at religions and traditions and doctrines now? I mean, look at what happened to those illustrators in Paris. What if it offends someone? What if they get pissed off and chop out our tongues? But it's in comedy and laughing that we find a way out, a way forward through all the fear of what people think of us and how we will be perceived. Laughter is a tool, an immediate opening, one that can soothe and stimulate and open up someone widely enough that truth can slip in. Laughter is healing. It healed me. That's just a piece of your blog. But I thought it was really powerful the way you articulated the experience, because it really made me think about, you know, I really value laughter as a way to kind of break up the seriousness of things that are going on sometimes, and the ability, you know, if you're too afraid to laugh, I think that really means, you know, I think that's when the terrorists win. And it made me curious about your perception, what you see as the role of laughter and humor in, you know, larger social change processes. Obviously that's part of your work, and also just to hear a bit about, you know, if you yourself experience any, you know, I see what you're doing as quite courageous, because I imagine there is threats that you would receive for doing what you do, and if there's any safety concerns, and just what you do to get support for that, or, you know, if you wanted to share any of that, I'd be curious.
Yeah, for sure. So I also originally, before the play was funny, these stories were pretty intense and heavy. And when I was first writing the memoir, I was kind of stuck in the heaviness of it all. And it was this dark, depressing, like, oh, the Muslim world, you know. And at the same time, I was doing improv. And I was in this improv troupe, an all-female improv troupe. And I was finding so much lightness and joy through making people laugh and doing characters. And it was just, it's healing to laugh. I mean, you know, it's literally an opening. You're opening yourself up. And as I started to kind of find and infuse the characters in the play with just their real voices and the kind of things they would say, it started to become funny. And I started to kind of realize that when you allow somebody the space to laugh, you're essentially opening them up, and you're able to communicate in just a much deeper way than when you are lecturing at them. You know, there's a different kind of relationship that gets created. When you laugh, you join. There's like a fusion that happens in the room. You know, when I'm doing the show and the audience starts laughing, they're with you. They're with you and they're open to receiving messages. So I do think that humor is a really powerful tool in conveying important, serious messages and doing it in a way that we can enjoy ourselves and be entertained. I mean, I often say that comedians today, I think, are doing a lot more than politicians in terms of becoming aware of social issues and, you know, race-related issues. And so, I do think that.
Mm-hmm. And what about your own, just, you know, have you had any any personal threats, or do you ever feel unsafe doing what you're doing? You know, you were talking about your audience feeling nervous, but I'm just curious if you've ever felt that way.
Yeah. I mean, I was supposed to take the show to Pakistan last month. This February, yes. And, you know, I spoke to a mentor of mine before and I was like, what do you think about the political climate? What do you think about taking the show? How will it be received? And, you know, her advice was just like, bad idea. It's not safe right now. Your message is too important. You need to go at a time where it, you know, there's just more conscious thought about who's going to be receiving this show. So I've definitely, I have more of a awareness about where I should be taking this show, how it can be received. And I have received threats, you know, over the internet and people who are offended by what they think I'm doing. It's typically people who haven't seen the show that have heard about me or seen a trailer who think that I'm defaming the Muslim religion or my family or my culture. When people see the show, they don't tend to have that reaction. You know, I think the first time I saw like a threat on YouTube, I was like, oh my God, can I leave? And I had this kind of exaggerated reaction, but now I don't really pay much mind to it. You know, part of the intention of the show is to provoke, which means that it's not always going to be aligned with, you know, what it is I think. So
Yeah. I mean, there's not a lot of women doing what you're doing, right? So, I mean, I think even the very nature of a woman sort of speaking out the way you are to more extremists, I mean, it would probably be threatening in some way. So I think it's courageous and it's great that you're doing it. And that you found a way to do it that's, I think, both humorous and respectful, you know, to the larger conversation. So kind of this ties in with, you know, your performance obviously provokes, as you were saying, a lot of questions, and I think, you know, ties in with a lot of the larger political and religious issues that are on a lot of people's minds, particularly around Islam and the Middle East and gender equality and terrorism. And one of the debates, I mean, there's a lot of debates we could talk about, but I wanted to really dive into the question about the veil, because your performance is really about your evolution beyond the veil. And I find in the public conversations, I've been following this a lot, and I find it sort of fascinating as a Western woman trying to like figure out the best way to enter that conversation or not enter it, you know, and feeling like conversation tends to get quite polarized. And I've been reading a lot, and I'm, you know, watching debates online between both, you know, self-identified Muslim women and ex-Muslim women and Western feminists. And there's sort of, you know, two sides that I see tend to show up in these debates. And the one side being that obviously the veil comes in many forms: the burqa, the hijab, the headscarf. So there's different meanings behind it, but the idea that, you know, one side believing that it's really an inherently oppressive thing that victimizes women, and, you know, by its very nature of what it symbolizes, that Western women, in particular women who have freedom, should be speaking out against it, should be supporting, you know, Muslim women who may not have a voice in their own communities to not wear it. And then, you know, there's the other side of the debate that tends to focus more on giving women free choice to wear what they want, to be culturally sensitive, to not assume that Muslim women are inherently oppressed by their religion, and that the veil, in fact, may just be a sign of their own desire for modesty or their respect for religious beliefs. So, I mean, obviously, it's a very complex debate, and you're just one person in that. But I'm curious, you know, I'm really interested in gender issues. I'm curious about what's the best way to be in this conversation, and, you know, what to support. So, if you had any insight on this that you could give to the larger audience, or just your where you've come to with it, it would be great to hear.
So I think that, like you said, it is complicated. And I think that we do have to be culturally sensitive to the idea that, and the truth, not just the idea, that there are many Muslim women who choose to wear the veil, not because somebody else has told them to, not because they're being forced, because they truly are smart, active women who have decided that this is an empowered choice for them and feel empowered as a result. I mean, you can't take that away from somebody, you know, and I know people like that, and I know people who choose to wear the veil and feel stronger for it and feel like it identifies them as Muslims and it's part of their relationship with Allah. And, you know, there has to be space for that in part of the conversation. And at the same time, I feel like the idea that a female has to be veiled, I think that the context that creates that idea is inherently sexist. It's inherently objectifying of the female form. And I think that's problematic. So, you know, yeah, everybody has the freedom to wear what they want. But I would say the same thing about extreme Western liberalism, which is about putting on the bikini and owning our sexuality and dancing around in a thong. The fact that women are still being identified, measured, and then our behavior is in accordance to how we look is ultimately an issue, whether it's through the burqa or whether it's through the bikini. So, you know, you can't say to somebody that that's wrong and da-da-da-da, but I feel like underlying it all is still a basic objectification of women. And as a result, this is our behavior in accordance to it. If a woman wasn't seen primarily as an object, then the conversation around veiling and unveiling, I don't think would be as prevalent as it is.
Right. And do you feel like, I guess my tendency has been to feel that the, you know, because I see a lot of Western people having conversations about this issue, and I tend to want to side with feeling that it's going to have to come from within the communities themselves, like whether women evolve out of the veil or they choose to keep wearing it. You know, maybe I'm being culturally relativist in that, but I tend to think that it has to come from within the communities themselves. I mean, not that we can't support in some way, but that that conversation has to be had amidst Muslim women, and not necessarily something that we can, you know, do for anybody from the outside. What's your sense of that?
I agree. I still think just the kind of mentality is very much about outsiders having a comment, you know, commenting on what we're doing. But when it comes from inside, there is definitely a deeper sense of trust. And I mean, even with me, even though this is my community and this is where I come from, because of what I'm doing and how I'm identifying now, in many ways, I've been excommunicated. I mean, you know, people identify me now as like not one of us. You know, she's become white. She's become a coconut. She, you know, is on stage talking about her family. She's not really what we're like anymore. So for me, coming from that community, I'm trying to find a way to actually speak to that community. I mean, of course, I'm doing it from the show, through the show, but just I definitely think that it has to come from within.
Yeah. And I think just even more stories like yours, women telling their stories, right, is going to inherently change the conversation. It's going to make people think more. Obviously, that's, I think, the most important thing.
For sure.
Cool. So I wanted to just sort of talk about your current projects. I know you're obviously continuing with Burk Off, and that's been really successful. You're also starting a new series called Shugs and Fats, and which is a comedic web series about two Muslim women, one of them you, and what's your co-actor's name?
Her name's Radhika Vaz.
Okay, yeah, she's hilarious too. Yeah. and on a quest to, you know, basically in the show, you're Muslim women who are trying to reconcile your own cultural beliefs with living in Brooklyn. And I mean, I was watching the series before this, and my favorite one, I think, was when you buy the vibrator online and you don't know what it is. And then start experimenting with it.
Yeah.
It's pretty funny. But they're all quite funny. I was curious, you know, what you're hoping to do with this, and if you have other major projects you're working on, or just in kind of wrapping this up, where you feel you'd like to see your work go in the future.
Yeah. So Shugs and Fats, you know, we're really excited about it. We are continuing to write and create more episodes and really make it a little bit more narrative and feel. So we really want to go into the relationship between that Shugs and Fats have with each other. One, you know, Fats is a bit more traditional in her thinking. Shugs kind of wants to try everything, and they're kind of trying to figure out how to live in liberated Brooklyn, coming from a bit more of a confined background. So that's really interesting for us, because we also get to tackle issues around feminism and gender that we're facing in our own lives, and you know, we're using this medium to explore it, which is essentially what I want to continue to do. So I'm working on a sequel for Burk Off, which is called Jerk Off, just kind of like what happens when I come to the US and get fully immersed in Western culture, drugs, sex, spirituality, all kinds of things. And then really using my own story and putting truth on the table in a way that's entertaining, to continue having larger dialogues and discussions about the things that I care about and I'm interested in. And just really using this medium that I found and love. Mm-hmm. So that will be the continuing thing for me.
Awesome. Well, I'm really excited. I'm going to be excited to keep watching your work, and I hope we can stay in contact, because I'd love to see how your work evolves. And just, I'm glad that you're having this conversation in the wider public space, and I just, you know, however I can support that, I'd like to be able to do that. So yeah, just glad that you came on, and thank you so much for taking out your time. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. Very cool to speak with you. Thanks so much, Vanessa.